This is your World War III Day X update. Now, a Russian/Chechen general currently overseeing operations within the Kursk Oblast. That is the region of Russia that is currently being invaded by NATO and its Ukrainian expeditionary forces. I never thought I would say such a thing and not be inside a bunker when I said it, but that's what's happening. Anyways, he has a very ominous warning for Western civilians, okay? This is the frontline commander. This is not your run-of-the-mill, hot-headed, incorrigible general like an Evgeny Prigozhin or a Ramzan Kadyrov who just says whatever they thinks and has no filter. Typically, this guy is quite composed. So to hear him make these statements, which are laced with a nuclear rhetoric, which is more typical of those hot-headed Russian officials, is concerning to say the least. Now, before we get into this and the other news of the day, I just want to show you this video that I referenced in a video I released 2 days ago. But of course, I was in the car when I did that video, so I wanted to show you the actual footage. Now, this is a blast door in a Moscow Metro subway station that accidentally was triggered, it looks like, some kind of malfunction, clearly, because there is a fence that goes over it that was nearly crushed. It looks like it didn't go all the way up, or maybe it was crushed and it came back down. If you don't know, the Moscow Metro subway stations are some of the deepest in the world. They can go deep as 173 feet. Rumor has it that there are actually military facilities underneath that, and you can't access them because guys with guns will probably shoot you. But this is one of the most extensive subterranean civilian bunkers in the world, which is, of course, dual purpose. So Joseph Stalin built it for the purpose of shoveling people around, but also for the purpose of sheltering people in times of nuclear crisis, not just for nuclear, but other bombardment as well. But, of course, these blast doors coming up, I mean, was this just some kind of drunken malfunction? Was this the result of maybe them dusting off the old manual and making sure that things worked, if you catch my drift, just in case they had to use it? If you are from Moscow, maybe you can let us know if this is a regular occurrence. Do these tests happen at certain times throughout the day? Maybe they do. Maybe this was just a harmless malfunction. Obviously not entirely harmless, because I'm not sure how fast those blast doors come up. I assume it's quite quick. Maybe there's some sort of warning that is given. Regardless, to see people scramble over it like this, of course, the NAFO crowd is poking fun at this, but they need to remember that nothing of this sort exists here in the West, and certainly not where I live, and certainly not in the major cities of North America. Perhaps some cities in Western Europe have some things like this, but I highly doubt it. So while you might laugh and say that it is a harbinger for what's to come for Muscovites, of course, there's another side to this story, and it's that we don't even have this, okay? Whether or not it's going to function properly is another story. Now, the question is, was this a trial one? Was this a message being sent? A way to get the attention of the West and even the Russian populations to warn them that, hey, we're starting to get prepared for this contingency and maybe you should too. One thing I know for certain is that the Russian culture, even though you're going to have your run-of-the-mill, I'm sure that most Muscovites are very similar to how we are here in the West in terms of complacency and normalcy bias. But there's certainly a more of an ethos of preparedness embedded within the culture than there is here, not only in school, where they're now actually teaching high school students CBRN survival, that's chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear survival skills. Of course, they've had nationwide drills. They routinely will have nationwide sirens going off. So they're more accustomed to this level of Cold War style nuclear Armageddon preparedness than we are. So I would say that they as a society, and not just them, but all of our adversaries who've been forced essentially to go underground while we've been able to branch out. And such is one of the consequences of having such a technological advantage for so long and being a part of the Pax American hegemon vassal state network, is that we've been able to stick our necks out without fear of recourse for decades, okay? These guys have had to go underground, whether it's North Korea or Iran or China or Russia. They all have vast, extensive networks of missile cities, and they have all the infrastructure underground. I would not doubt that they don't have nuclear complexes underground. Of course, Iran will soon have a nuclear reactor underground. I don't doubt that they have extensive stockpiles of supplies in order to rebuild society. If you haven't seen our many videos on this topic, I would encourage you to thumb through the archives, whether it's the video we did on asymmetrical warfare, which talks about how we have a disadvantage when it comes to subterranean warfare, which of course is everything when it comes to surviving nuclear conflict, or whether it's our talks with some experts on the topic who go into depth about what exactly is stockpiled inside these bunkers. We've been able to enjoy the spoils of living above ground. People in other countries have not. And now that the tables are starting to turn and they're forming their own trading blocks and they're all starting to work together, that's a problem because we are decades behind in this respect, in many respects. So I'm hoping that that was just a malfunction, but I think everything happens for a reason, and that's scary. That's very scary stuff, because one of these days it could be for real, and hopefully you have everything in order when that time comes. Now let's talk about Abdi Aladnov. He is the Chechen commander overseeing operations in the Kursk direction. This is a video from Patrick Lancaster, one of the few, I would say, objective journalists still on the front line, even though he's deeply embedded within the Russian side. And I'm certain that he would espouse ideology that is more akin to the Russian perspective than the Western one. He still gives you the perspective of Russians without tainting it with any of his own opinion, like that Russian guy, Texas Bentley, who was the American guy who defected to Russia. Anyways, let me just tell you about his statements that he made, and we can try to assess their meaning and their significance. Okay, so Abdi Aladinov, Chechen / Russian commander. I'm not sure if his exact rank, if he's a general or not. Regardless, this is what he had to say. He's the one who oversees all of the defensive operations right now, so very important role. This is the guy defending Russia on the front line right now. He says, your leadership, talking to us, North Americans, and all of the vassal states, is doing all it can to launch a nuclear war. Think about that statement for a second, okay? Really think about that statement. He is explicitly stating that we are trying to incite a nuclear war. Why would we want to do that? We got to think about why. And I'm not saying that to disparage what he's saying. I'm saying that because I want you to really think about why we would want to do that. It goes back to Day X, Thucydides' trap. Either you stop the fascistic, satanic leadership, or a nuclear war will come to you. They've been trying with all means to make Russia cross red lines and use its nuclear weapons. Now, the question is, let me read this first, because I tend to do this where I'll start analyzing things midway and I never read the initial statement, so let me just read this. Ukraine, he says, will cease to exist. The Russian nuclear power will not lose the war. After all, why do we need the world if there is no Russia? You need to rise up and stop your government. The SMO, that special military operation, ends this year, or it transfers to a third world war and you will not enjoy it. That is perfectly in line with the statements of Alexander Vucic, the warnings from Hungary's president, Viktor Orban, the warnings from Robert Fico, the guy who was nearly assassinated, remember him, and numerous others who are warning that the final tipping point of this conflict is about to ensue. Now, this statement that he makes, they've been trying with all means to make Russia cross red lines and use its nuclear weapons. Clearly, we would presume that he means that this is an attempt to demonize and vilify the Russians as being irrational because they finally used a nuclear weapon. But think about the restraint that the Russians have demonstrated thus far. These are not people who are bombastically throwing their nukes around everywhere at every turn. No doubt, many people thought the nuclear threshold was much, much lower than it already has been. So I think at this point in time, even if the Russians used nuclear weapons, it would not be as negatively perceived on the global stage as it might have been much earlier on. In fact, many countries would probably appreciate the abruptness with which this could potentially bring the whole conflict to an end. But if Ukraine is banking on, or like in his case, what he's saying, they want us to use nuclear weapons, and I'm not saying this guy is the end-all be-all, and what he's saying is 100% true, but if we just give it its fair due of analysis, if it's true that Ukraine is trying to elicit a nuclear attack, then that must mean that they have a way to respond to that, or that they are hoping that NATO is going to up the ante even further thereafter and possibly strike back or possibly turn Russia's allies against them. But as I've already stated, I don't even think if Russia was to use a nuclear strike directly on the battlefield at this point in time, if China really gives a damn. If Iran doesn't give a damn at this point in time. I mean, let's think about it. North Korea doesn't give a shit, right? They have a strategic partnership. If anything, I think at this point in time, it would almost be welcome because many of these countries want Russia to wrap it up. They don't want this thing to drag on, or maybe some do because it takes a bit of attention away from them. And this is why the Russians have a vested interest, arguably, in getting China to make a move on Taiwan, getting Iran to get into a fighting match with Israel. So as Peter Thiel indicated today, the United States can fight a war on three fronts, and that's what it plans on doing. I think it was Alex Karp, the CEO of Palantir, who suggested that today, that the U.S. is in fact going to be engaging in a war on three fronts. How we're going to do that, I have no idea. It's going to take years to reindustrialize. Maybe that's how they're going to bring all the jobs back when the markets crash. It would be very textbook in terms of the historical progression. You get the pandemic, you get the depression, and to get out of the depression, you would reinvigorate the military-industrial complex. So I think what he's saying has a lot of merit. It seems at this point that they're looking to provoke the Russians at every possible turn, but they want to do it in a way which is manageable. So in a way that potentially gets Russia to burn bridges with its allies. But I simply cannot, at this stage in the game, see any of Russia's allies taking umbrage to them using nuclear weapons. Certainly not in a testing demonstrative capacity, although perhaps in China, that might cause them to want to justify reinvigorating their own nuclear testing program. So in that case, the Russians are almost incentivized, and this is just stream of consciousness, folks, just trying to think this through. I think Russians would be wise to actually use the nukes on the battlefield, obviously minimizing civilian casualties to the greatest extent possible. I was the first one who floated the idea that maybe the first nuke used will be by Russians on Russian territory, but it might be better to do that, and I believe I can't remember his name off the top of my head, is it Karaganov? One of the, Sergei Karaganov, I think he is one of the political pundits who contemplates these sorts of things, and he is one of the guys calling for a demonstrative nuclear strike, but he says that that might not even be enough. Because if you just do a nuclear test, all you're going to do then is restart nuclear testing. And then the U.S. is going to be justified to restart, and that's going to, but it's not going to end it. You almost need to use it on the battlefield to abruptly end this in its tracks. And it appears as though NATO will not pushing until that point comes. And what's concerning to me, going back to these indomitable structures, fortresses underneath the ground that we have no equivalent here in our society, is that as I've long since suspected, and as Andy Jacobson articulates very well in her book, Nuclear War, we are at an extreme disadvantage when it comes to fighting a nuclear war. In so many respects, not just in terms of our inability to defend against barely any of the hundreds of missiles that might be flying over, but in the resiliency and robustness of our grid, our society as a whole. You know, there's that old sort of understanding that the Russians have a far more analog society than our digital one, and that things there were built for the ruggedness of war and didn't have the green zone warfare that we've enjoyed for so long, where you can get this nice fancy plane that you can fly it for an hour, but then it needs 24 hours of maintenance in this safe haven green zone. Their stuff is built to be used and abused on the front line over and over and over again, and to work and to be simple so that any grunt can pick it up, get in there, and make it work. Whereas our society is far more complex and elaborate. And that Microsoft outage demonstrated that very clearly. So that is what the frontline general, the guy who is on the front, and it's very important to understand, this is not just, you know, some blowhard on the front line. This is the guy who Putin has entrusted to defend the country on the front line from what Putin views as, and what largely is, a NATO-funded materiel and manpower operation into Russia proper. Now, the stated purpose of this, you might be wondering. The stated purpose, according to Zelensky, initially was to take a nuclear power plant. It's uncertain as to whether or not they're going to get that far at this point in time. What they have succeeded in doing is blowing out some bridges that the Russians have been using to access in an attempt to push the Ukrainians back. So several bridges, as well as pontoon bridge crossings, have been destroyed. So the Russians are trying to push the Ukrainians out. The primary goal was to get to the Kursk nuclear power plant, which they failed to do. And it's looking less likely by the day that they're actually going to be able to succeed at that. Many people are wondering, where the hell are all the soldiers? The Russians currently have an estimated, by the end of this year, 800,000 soldiers in Ukraine. Many of these guys are battle-hardened. So where the hell are they? Well, they're making progress in the Donbass, significant progress. And that, of course, is the primary objective for the Russians at this point in time, is locking down their four annexed territories. I'm sure they're not too bothered by several brigades of Ukrainians piling over the border, so long as they're not going to continuously be reinforced. But if they are, then that's going to be exceptionally problematic, especially if NATO continues to raise the ante, which I think they will. NATO is not going to fold. And contrary to popular belief that there's going to be this retrenchment in spending for the Ukrainians, that the Germans were going to be cutting in half their funding to Ukraine, it all turned out to be a bunch of nonsense. In fact, the EU is now going to give Ukraine a 50 billion euro loan, which you know they ain't going to be able to pay back. They're just exploiting Eastern European manpower to throw into the meat grinder. And quite frankly, these are all guys who in a parallel universe might be fighting with the Russians against the West. So for them, it's a win-win. You get rid of a liability, and then you're also depleting and attriting the Russians, both in personnel and materiel. However, what it's doing is it's just waking up the Russian war machine. Because when a nation goes to war, there's all these knock-on effects, right? There's these residual effects. When you build the machinery to build tanks and it creates jobs, well, you are expending resources. And war is, at least in the short term, inflationary because you're expending resources that otherwise might would have went to something else. You're building the infrastructure required to make new technological innovations on the base of that. And like it or not, war has brought us pretty much every technological innovation that we've come to know right now. So necessity is the mother of invention, they say. What else is going on, though, is that they're suspecting that there is an accumulation of forces in and around the Zaporizhia region, that the Ukrainians are getting ready to try to make a break for Zaporizhia nuclear power plant once again. So something really, really big is cooking right now, okay? There are some big maneuvers. It's make or break. But what I think is going to happen is as soon as it appears as though the Ukrainians are beginning to capitulate, we're going to hear a bunch of sob stories about why we need to continue to up the ante some more. We're going to send longer range missile systems, more offensive weaponry, more materiel. Poland is probably going to make a provision to shoot down Russian missiles in Ukrainian airspace, which, of course, the Russians have said will be met with force. Direct attacks on Poland, of course, would constitute a triggering of Article 5, which would bring NATO into the war. But there's a lot of these weird military bilateral agreements being made with these countries, so it might not necessarily be Poland as a representative of NATO, but Poland as a representative of these bilateral agreements with the Ukrainians. So a lot of crazy stuff that's happening at the moment. Vladimir Putin has today, for the first time ever, I've never heard Vladimir Putin say this, he said that there is no longer any negotiations with Kiev in response to the Kursk invasion. So this is new because the Russians have always, in spite of countless infringements onto their territory and things that they would deem to be just egregious, just incursions into their territory, despite everything that has happened and all of the attacks on critical infrastructure, the Russians have still kept the door for peaceful reconciliation open. But now that door is officially closed. Sergei Lavrov, speaking on behalf of Vladimir Putin, said today that not only have they dismissed reports of hidden contacts between Moscow and Kiev, allegedly mediated by Qatar and Turkey, but that Putin has vowed no negotiations with Ukraine after the Kursk invasion. So I'm thinking that what he means is that first they have to clear out Kursk before they're going to allow any sort of negotiations to ensue. And even then, again, he's got the patience of a Buddhist monk. This is a Rostov oil refinery, one of the biggest oil refineries in the region. How many oil refineries can the Ukrainians knock off and oil remain completely unfazed? Oil is about to get a rude awakening because everybody right now is banking on this phony baloney ceasefire deal, which is completely fictitious. I can't believe the markets are falling for it. Hamas has not agreed to it. I'll get into it in just a moment. But these attacks like this are what the Russians have. They've granted Ukraine clemency for this type of thing, which has been ongoing for months, if not a couple years already. Excuse me. I'm still a little under the weather and disheveled as all hell, trying to make it through this, guys. But I would have thought that one of these incidents would have triggered some big bada boom before. But, you know, the Russians, they have their own prerogatives and they're sticking to it. And they're not getting caught in a reactionary trap, which appears what, according to that general, is what they want, right? They want them to start reacting. And Lavrov also indicated that this incursion into Russian territory would not have happened without Western approval. And that is proven by the fact that just today, the EU is talking about these loans to Ukraine for 50 billion euros, despite everything they say about, yeah, we're not allowing them to use weapons inside that territory. If they're helping them fortify the rear with said weapons, and Ukraine is then using its expendable assets to go in to Russia proper, it's essentially the same thing, right? So this oil facility has more than 11 tanks burning, one of the biggest, largest oil depots in the frontline region, of course, serving a crucial military function as well. Clearly, there was some failure in air defense there. So that's just another tick up the escalatory ladder. Belarus is sending one-third of their army to the border. That's 120,000 troops. I didn't realize that Belarus had a army of 360,000 troops. I'm not sure if that includes all their reserves. 120,000 troops redistributed across the Ukrainian border. Remember the other day when Lukashenko, he says so many abrupt things. Like he said the other day that, yep, we figured it out and we've pulled our forces back from the Ukrainian border. And then within a week, Ukraine is attacking. And that just made me think. I just thought about this. But you know, there is an argument that this was bait. That the Russians baited the Ukrainians in. Now, some anecdotal evidence to support that would be the fact that Belarus did indeed pull their forces away from, which was a fixing maneuver, right? Because they had their forces at the southern part of Belarus, which those Ukrainian forces were fixed there in a defensive posture. Then those forces moved from there and invaded Russia, where we see right now. So some people suspect that actually Putin invited these guys in so that they could basically take out and form a cauldron around some of their best fighting force. But you think that Ukraine would have thought of this. But I guess, you know, maybe when you're on the front line and you're just receiving orders and you're being told everything is fine and, you know, maybe there's a certain deception that happens on the front line that you don't quite see clearly that would compel you into doing something this crazy. And so far, it appears to be working in the sense that they're blowing out the, not to say they're not taking losses, but they're still making progress doing these pinprick attacks. They haven't reached their target goal of the Kursk nuclear power plant. But it makes me wonder if this wasn't a trap in some capacity. Because why would Lukashenko, who's a terrible actor, it does seem, now that I think about it, terrible actor, he was insistent that, yeah, problem solved. And now, of course, he's saying a different tune altogether, that if you cross our borders, we're going to nuke you. Okay? Period, point blank. We're not going to hesitate. There's not going to be this red line rhetoric. We're just going to nuke you. And that's why Vladimir Putin gave us the nukes. And of course, I don't think that Belarus would elicit the same response. That would necessitate a strategic response from all of Europe in the way that a Russian nuclear attack, even on Poland, would. But, you know, that's something to be analyzed on another day. Russia today has said that you can immigrate to Russia if you want to escape the neoliberalism of the West. It'll be interesting to see how many people take him up on that offer. He's perhaps trying to offer some sort of safe haven for a lot of people who've been speaking out against the U.S. government lately and their response not only to the Israeli conflict, but also the Russian one. What else do we got going on here? Rumors that, of course, Blinken is saying that, oh yeah, peace. Peace is coming, blah, blah, blah. It's the same deal that Hamas has rejected. Okay, so essentially what Hamas wants is they want all of the Israeli military out, all of the IDF out of the region. They want some of their prisoners back. And there was one other stipulation, I believe it was a permanent ceasefire. While this deal that Netanyahu has agreed to, and again, the Iranians nor the Hamas group, because of course their chief negotiator is dead, were invited to these talks. So they've denied this, right? So what the West is trying to position itself to gain, to curry moral favor with the international community and saying, hey, we had a deal here, Hamas rejected it, and now we're going to have to go in and finish the job. There's many other escalatory events that have happened today. That video doesn't seem to want to load. One of which was a attack on a Lebanese weapons storage facility. In fact, several facilities were targeted by the IDF today, signaling that they must suspect that an attack is imminent if they're trying to take out all of these power facilities. And of course, with the blackout that we've seen yesterday, which is quite common in Lebanon, and for some reason, this stupid website doesn't want to work.
Let me see if we can get something going on in the back that's actually going to work. Blinken, does it go on? Maybe it's day X. Maybe this is it. We're just going to have to look at that, and we're going to have to deal with it, okay? So, according to an Iranian general Brigadier General Fadavi, the uproar in the occupying entity due to waiting for the Iranian response is more difficult for them than death. They are waiting for our response day and night. Now, he is saying that they're using psychological warfare in order to turn up the heat on an attrit Israel. I'm not sure what the hell is going on here. The response is coming. Well, that's kind of ominous, isn't it? How it just says that. Anyways, it feels weird not having a background for you guys, so we're just going to leave it at that. What else can be said about this? Israel is calling up more reserves. The army is calling up reserve soldiers who were exempted due to a shortage. After a security assessment, I believe that one of the chief members of the Israeli military council is getting ready to resign unless a ceasefire deal is reached. According to Mike Turner, chairman of the House of Intelligence Committee, he claims that Iran could declare itself a nuclear weapon state by the end of the year, setting, of course, the precedent for an invasion into Iran. Gold price still appears to be holding around the 2,540 mark, which is obscene. Okay, let's see, are we doing something here? There we go. So this is a video that was released by, well, on behalf of Yemen. And it's a combination of all of the axis of resistance, from Yemen to Iran to the IRGC to the internet that's not working again, to Syrian forces, Hezbollah, Hamas, possibly some groups in the West Bank. Anyways, this is a group that brings it all together. And what they're saying is that Day X is coming, essentially. So that's the gist of that video. You see a lot of videos put out by each one of these factions, but to have them all in one video and showing that solidarity is interesting. It's a sign that we might potentially see the whole region blow up very, very soon. I mean, we will at some point. It's just a matter of time, right? Because I think that the markets have been completely duped. You know, this might be symbolic of the response. You know, the response is coming. The response is stalled right now. The response is buffering. Anyways, my friends, I think I'm going to leave it at that for today because I got work to do on the homestead. It's a lot of work, guys. And all I can say is that no matter how much money you throw at a problem, when SHTF comes, you're still going to have to work. And even just building out a homestead in the first place, there are no real, true turnkey solutions, even for people with above average means. It's still a hell of a lot of work, and I'm doing all the work myself because, you know, I just don't like, you got to stay hard, you got to stay strong. And that means getting in there, doing the shit yourself, getting your hands dirty, and because the time is going to come when you're going to have no choice. So we're going to be doing a dedicated video on what you can do depending on how much time we have left, whether it's a year, 6 months, 3 months, 7 days, or 24 hours. Stay tuned for that. And we got a lot of other funner, more lighthearted content coming your way as well. I know some people just like the doom and gloom, but you got to pair it. You got to pair it with the actual getting out there and doing the stuff. All right. Thanks for watching, my friends. Take care.